This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Matt and Patrick here. Patrick, I thought Sting was tantric. Dear Lord, it's taking us a while to count these ballots in these states. But you know what? I understand why. Because you got to imagine the pressure. Just forget about Trump and Biden. The pressure from the local state political parties. And all the politicians in said state must be astronomical.
I can't even imagine.
I can't either. And if you are a person who counts votes, what is your response to that? Go very slow, be very diligent, and just sort of say, and film everything, put everything on camera, and. Here's a ballot. Let's open up the envelope. Here's that. Oh, the signature matches. Everything's good. Feed it to the system. It worked well. Next envelope. That is, if I was doing this and I had this many people, because if the feeling is something was stolen, and for all you Trump people out there right now who are, stop the voting, or else if you're in Arizona, it's keep counting the votes, I should say it's not stop the voting. Stop the counting is what they're saying. Stop the counting. Okay, first of all, you guys got to get your message straight. I mean, this is not like 2000 where you just have one place where you can hammer your shoes on the counter and scream about stopping the recount. You basically what you're doing is this. You're not screaming stop the vote, because if you were screaming stop the vote, Joe Biden becomes president of the United States, because currently he leads in Arizona and Nevada. Together, that's enough. He wins. What you're saying is stop the vote and only start counting votes in certain states and certain kind of votes in said states. Then you can move forward. Well, that's just evil dictator stuff. So it's going to happen here. I would be shocked. I mean, the four states that we are looking at here are Arizona, Nevada, and I mean, Arizona has been called, and even Fox News today came on out and still insisted. Now there's nothing that tells them that Arizona wasn't won by Biden. So then, if we're going to take Arizona as done, then you just basically have to go look. First of all, is Nevada, and Nevada, it seems like those guys are the most scared. Of the politicians in their own state. They are going painfully slow in Nevada. Currently, as I pull this up on the Washington Post webpage, it's a 12,000 vote lead for Biden. But there was an interesting point after Nevada updated the system. There was a nonpartisan election journalist reporter who's covered the vote in Nevada. He basically made the comment, there's just no path for Trump at this point to get the votes he needs. So even though they haven't called it, it sounds like Nevada is likely going to stay with Biden. Pennsylvania has been the most entertaining because, once again, because the Republican legislature in Pennsylvania refused to allow the election officials to start counting absentee ballots before the end of the election, they have piles and piles of these legal ballots that they have to scan into the system. That is why it's taking so long. Yesterday morning, the difference between Trump and Biden was 900,000 votes. As of right now, this just got updated too. We are less than 100,000 votes now separating the two. We're still only at 92% of the vote count. Pennsylvania's got 12 million people in it, and so I'm going to guess, 8 million voters? That tells me there's probably somewhere in the area of 600,000 votes, and most of them come from real Democratic areas. And, yeah, so it is 98,000. That's it. The separation between them now is 98,000. It was 900,000 yesterday. It's 98,000. That is just getting updated in Pennsylvania. Georgia is also fascinating because there is a legit chance that Biden could win Georgia. Almost all the votes have been counted. I mean, there's only a few, somewhere in the area of like 40 or 50,000 votes that are still outstanding, maybe 200,000. I can't remember this. I'm trying to keep track of too many votes here. But there's not many votes left. I mean, it is pretty much at the end. But that is a 13,000-vote lead for Trump. And the vast majority of the votes still outstanding are in the county where Savannah is on the coast. That is liberal. That is a Democratic stronghold. And so, you know, I'm not saying now that's there are like 17,000 votes there. That's not going to be the difference maker. But the other counties, the majority of the votes that are outstanding are coming from Democratic areas. And it might be a few hundred votes the difference, but I think Joe Biden's going to win Georgia. And I kind of want that to happen. I mean, frankly, I'm going to just be honest. I really hope that both Pennsylvania and Georgia join Nevada and Arizona and they all push him over. He'll be well over 300 electoral college votes at that electoral college votes at that point. So he'll win. Biden will be the winner. But just the way that Trump is a petulant man child, even, and I'm going to be blunt, even if it was a 400 point electoral college win for Biden, Trump would still throw a temper tantrum. But the further away you get away from 270, the more that you pile on that, he's just not going to have the support. He's not going to have a political party. I mean, the guys like Tom Cotton and Jim Jordan, who basically can't wait to put their knee pads on for the guy, they'll run to his defense. But the reality is that, you know, most of the mainstream Republicans are even going to be like, no. Because they know this. At the end of the day, most Republicans want him gone. Because if you think about him still being in power, first of all, they would have to rig the system for him to win. Which, if you thought things were bad in the last year with protests, oh my God. I can't even comprehend what this country would devolve into if you had the president of the United States openly stealing an election with the help of his Department of Justice for the incumbent president when it was clear that he lost. I mean, right now, he's definitely going to lose the popular vote by 4 to 5 million votes. So it's one of those cases where, it would just be catastrophic. But there is no way. I mean, they would have to openly campaign against him, which it's going to be fascinating. The Republican Party after Trump is going to be fascinating to watch. Clearly, whoever their candidate is in 2024 is probably going to be just a guy in a white sheet. It's going to be a Klan member, for God's sakes. A guy with a Nazi tattoo on his forehead. Because, frankly, that's where a lot of the party is. The problem with the Republican Party has got now is that their primary system is set up to where the most ardent supporters, the most far right loon balls pick. And how in the post age of Trump, you're going to have someone who's, Jim Ramstead or something like that come walk through the door and win that's not going to happen. They're going to want someone, they'll try to find someone they can sell as moderate, but does all the dog whistles, all the, talk about heritage and stuff like that. Someone needs to put those people in that town in their place, that sanctuary city, that sort of thing. You know what I'm talking about. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, it's just going to take some time. I also do get the strong suspicion that Arizona, Nevada specifically are waiting for Pennsylvania to flip to Biden, because then it takes a tremendous amount of pressure off of them. If all of a sudden Biden takes the lead in Pennsylvania and it doesn't look like there's any way in the world that Trump can take it back, then Pennsylvania is the state that sends Biden over the top. They can turn in their electoral college votes after the fact. Done, and seen. So, but like I said, and this morning I think it was, 300,000? Yesterday it went from like 900,000 to 300,000 in regards to the Electoral College votes. And it's just been going, you know, it's getting closer and closer. Once again, maybe they've updated it again here. Pennsylvania, I'm pulling it up here. No, they haven't updated, but 98,000 is down to 98,000. There's a reason why Trump, like I said, in the middle of the night on election night, started screaming, stop counting votes, because he knew it was coming. I want to talk a little bit about some of the outcomes of the election here that we do need to talk about. Because, I mean, we lost seats in the House. Not a lot of seats, but we lost seats in the House. And you did not pick up a Senate, which you should have picked up. And I've gone back and forth quite a bit on this, and it's going to be interesting to see how this happened, because Biden won the state fairly handily. Tina Smith won her seat fairly handily. I'll go with Paul Thiessen, who's the only other statewide race as a Supreme Court justice. He won his. I mean, he won his seat again fairly handily. But yet, there is the problems, and we talked about this yesterday, the fact that the DFL umbrella, I think, is too wide. You have two varying – you can't have a political party with Republicans under the same umbrella as liberal socialists. You know, you can't. There's no way to build a cohesive platform there. You have too many Republicans whose entire campaign strategy is, I love Republicans, or coming Democrats. I mean, there are too many Democrats whose entire campaign strategy is, I love Republicans, love them. And that's killing. I mean, especially when that's a U.S. House race, that is, you are crippling every Democrat running in your district for either a Minnesota House race or a Minnesota Senate race. You cannot do that. And if, frankly, I am so offended by that as a political party platform that the political party would tolerate your first thing is, hey, guess what? My best friends are all Republicans. You know, you've got to be a proud Democrat. And if you can't sell yourself as a Democrat first and foremost, well, then maybe you shouldn't be in the office. If you can't sell that, because I can tell you right now, I think one of the reasons why Democrats lost some of their seats was because of U.S. congresspeople who were running campaigns who were basically the entire time was, I love the Republicans. I really am. And I understand, hey, it might work for them, but it absolutely screws over every other Democrat who's running underneath that person in that district. Inexcusable. Inexcusable, if you ask me personally. And then the other thing is that you get into outstate Minnesota, and there's a real problem out there. And I'll touch more on this here in just a second. But, you know, when you have outstate Democrats whose primary villain that they are campaigning against is not Republicans, is not Donald Trump, it's Metrocrats. It's those Democrats in the city. Well, why in the hell is that person running as a DFLer? Why is the party tolerating that? And I'll get to that more here in just a second. But I do think we have to have a long discussion in this state about third parties. And if you are a pro-marijuana person, clearly the Republican Party of Minnesota is putting in fake pro-marijuana candidates. And once again, just for your party, your entire party is geared around one thing, legalization of marijuana. And you have people who have no intention of legalizing marijuana running as your candidates. No intention that if they, for some fluke, managed to win a seat, which once again, if it looked like they were about to win, most of these guys, I think, would say, I got to withdraw from this. So they have no intention of trying to win the seat. But even if they did win the seat, they would never go into Congress or into the Senate or into the House and try to actually legalize marijuana. They're only running to try to help their Republican buddy win their seat. That is a broken system. And I don't care how much pride you have in legalized cannabis. The reality is your candidates caused losses which make your cause harder to achieve. There are you're going to have a much better chance at legalizing marijuana with the Democrats than you are with the Republicans. And you've got candidates whose only goal is to make sure Republicans win, which means you're a fraud. The entire pro-pot parties is a fraud. And it's not that's not me calling it a fraud. It's you. You guys have created a fraudulent product. And so maybe, just maybe, if you want to be a real adult political party, you should put in some rules and some bylaws that people who are running are not, A, being recruited openly by another political party just to sabotage another candidate, and B, that they vow to stay in the race and campaign against all other parties, that they have no conflict of interest, and that they will, dear God, if you're the pro-pot party, they're going to legalize pot. And maybe, just maybe, you make people actually have to be part of your political party and register as part of your political party and be part of your political party for, I don't know, maybe a year or 2 years before they can run. Which prevents people from, hey, Bob, you know, you smoked some pot back in college, right? Can you pretend to be a pro-pot candidate to help out a Republican? Because your current system is broken. And frankly, until I hear from the pro-pot party they're changing everything, my solution is this. You, as a Democrat, should never even consider a pro-pot candidate because you can't tell if they're a real pro-pot candidate or just a Republican plant trying to help the Democrat win or help the Republican win and take out, knock out the Democrat. I don't know what else you can do. And before anyone says, Matt, that's not fair. No, what's not fair is you guys running your clown car of a political party so loosey-goosey that you will basically allow half of your damn candidates to be plants. And to think that the pro-pot party should know what a plant is by now. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. Let me talk a little bit about outstate Minnesota when I do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205 is the number. So I want to talk about, I want to focus more on the point I made yesterday about outstate Republicans, or excuse me, Republicans, Democrats, because it is hard to comprehend this, but trust me, when I say, I was calling around for Democrat of the Day, and I have, I'm sorry, I'm not with the DFL. I'm a private radio show host. I'll interview all politicians. I always said, hey, I'll have a Republican of the Day. But I try to get as many Democrats on, talk to them, because obviously the audience here. And so I would call, but once again, I want to make sure, I'm not with the DFL. We are a private commercial radio station. I am a host on that station. And so, I know Ken Martin, I know Marge Hoffa over the DFL, but I'm not part of the DFL. And so I'd call these Democrats, and like I said, I think one of the things I learned in 2016, and I thought it was very effective in 2018, was it's good to get outstate Democrats on the air here so people, A, get to hear who they are, where they're running, and try to help them out as well. This year was very different. Most of the time, I'd either get ignored. In the past, I'd either get ignored, they just wouldn't call me back, or they'd take me up on it, and I'd interview them, and they thought it was great, and it was very nice. This year, I ran into a new category of DFLer. This is a Democrat, and I'll highlight it by Brittany Johnson up in 8A. I called Brittany up, and I never had her on the air. I will never have her on the air. I called her up and I said, hi, my name is Matt McNeil. I'm with AM 950 in Minneapolis, St. Paul. I was wondering if you'd like to be our Democrat of the day. Have you on the air. You can talk about the issues for your district and we can get out your web information and stuff like that. You can make a donation. Brittany, fairly quickly into the conversation, started screaming at me that I and apparently all of us in the metro area as Democrats are working against her and her district, and that, you know, that the DFL doesn't care about us. I'm like, wait a minute, you're the, and I actually asked her, I think, in the conversation, you're the DFL candidate, right? And she goes, yeah. And she, it was one of the more surreal conversations I've had. She would be yelling at me. She was yelling at me. What do you city people know anything about, like, up here? Well, I'm saying my family's from rural Minnesota, have been for generations. But you're not. Well, I'm currently living. See, you don't know. And I'm like, Jesus. And I said, well, you know, if she goes, do you tell me one good idea to combat Trump up here? Everyone up here loves Trump. And I said, well, I'd go down to every community has a World War I memorial. I'd point at that memorial and said, your ancestors put that up to remember the people who fought in World War I. Donald just Trump just called them all losers and suckers. How dare you? How dare you suggest I should do that? Don't you know these people would hate me for suggesting that? Like, what in the hell? I mean, Brittany Johnson was cray-cray in my personal opinion. I mean, I thought she was nuts. But, clearly she did not want to become Democrat of the day. And without a doubt in my mind, that woman ran where the biggest villain in her campaign was the DFL itself. And my mere suggestion to the Democratic Party in the state, if Brittany wants to run in 8A again, tell her no. You're not, you know, that you can't, you know, put out some rules or something like that basically prevent people who hate the DFL from running for the DFL candidate. I also came across this on the Iron Range. I came across this in southwestern Minnesota. I mean, it was unbelievable. And you cannot have a cohesive political party when you have members of the own party campaigning first and foremost against their own party. It doesn't make any damn sense. And if with all due respect to Brittany and any other Democrat, if you are in rural Minnesota and you can't put together a quality platform with DFL principles, then you should not be running for office. And if everyone's like, well, what do you think about those Metro Democrats? I said, well, those are their districts. I'm working on this district. And they say, well, you want to defund the police. And you say, hey, I don't think they're trying to defund the police. But once again, that's their district. I'm working on this district. You played right into the Republican hands by vilifying your own party. And guess what? You didn't win. You did. And you hurt Democrats as a whole. Probably Colin Peterson got hurt because how many Democrats were railing against other Democrats? And when you start shooting in the dark, guess what happens? You start hitting your own guys. Now, that being said, we have to address this divide that exists within the Democratic Party right now, the DFL, between rural and metro. We absolutely have to. And one of the things which I mean, first of all, I want to talk to, because someone sent me a Twitter picture. This is from rural Minnesota, and it said, to keep our heritage, vote Republican. And it's a sign to keep our heritage. I mean, it's clearly a racist dog whistle sign talking about, you know, some guy out in some rural town which might have a handful of minorities in any condition, thinking that some, I guess, some hordes of black Muslims are heading over the hill and are going to say, I guess, you're no longer German or English or Irish, that you're now, we're going to make you Swahili. I don't know what they're saying there. If you want to keep our heritage, vote Republican. Needless to say, it's just dog whistle racism. And it's in, and we have to talk a little bit about the fact that the reason why this schism exists is because the Republicans have manipulated it, but they've been able to manipulate a legitimate problem. Now, metro area Democrats, listen for a sec, okay? Just listen for a sec. When America, after World War II and the Great Depression, started to grow, it grew very differently in the metro cores than it did in rural America. You know, where you saw the rise of the suburbs and the growth and big business, that didn't take place out in rural America where many people today, their grandfathers were came back from the war, and there wasn't opportunities for them out there. That the growth was happening all in big metro major metro areas, not universally. In the 60s and 70s, when the one big company in the town that hired half the town decided, you know what, it's cheaper for us to move into Minneapolis, St. Paul, or Sioux Falls, or Duluth, or wherever, and took off, you know, there went your opportunity. And sure, they said you could have your job, but you know what, you'd have to leave your family's home. And here we are now with the current generation. Not only did they have to go through the 80s and watch family farms get wiped out, but take a look at the margins today. When if you're working as a farmer, it's a crime that you have to be working a second job just to make ends meet. And this stuff is not getting any better. And so as you're sitting here in the metro area and you're wondering what's the difference here, what you have seen in the metro, and it's not been universal in the metro either. I mean, let's be honest with you. Once again, the redlining and the way that the minority groups in the cities have been treated. But it has been very different how the metros grew versus rural America. And that is where the resentment comes in. The resentment comes in is the fact that these towns have a population of 50 and older and 18 and younger and no one else. Because the minute everyone graduates from high school, they take off and they don't come back. And it builds up resentment. It builds up anger. And that is real. And it is justified. It is very justified. But if I may, I do want to come back and remind the rural people that there are some problems here. And whereas you have had problems here, not all metro people are bad. I don't understand this idea that I am somehow working against you is ludicrous. Most metro area Democratic politicians I know want a strong agricultural base, are very much willing to do whatever they needed, and especially the ones that don't know that much about agriculture, they are willing to trust you and go with what you want to do. And so, you know, it's this idea that the metro area Democrats are against rural Democrats is ludicrous. That is a made up thing being manipulated by the Republicans, which is another problem here. Whereas your frustrations and the hardships that you have had to experience in rural Minnesota and rural America are very legitimate, from your grandparents to your parents to yourselves, the reality is that it makes you easily manipulatable. Oh, look at them. They're wanting to take your guns. They're going to defund the cops. They're going to take all the criminals out of the jails in Minneapolis, and they're going to put them right next door to your house. Oh, gosh. Look out. The black Muslim men are coming. And you guys, because out of frustration, are willing to go along with that. And that's ludicrous. If it sounds outrageous, maybe you should step back and say, that sounds pretty outrageous. I don't think anyone's proposed that. And if they say, trust me, don't look it up yourself, just trust me, well, then you know it's not true. But the reality is this, is that there is another issue here. The fact that there is a pre-printed sign that says, to keep our heritage, vote Republican. It's not fair to label everyone in outstate Minnesota as racist, but it's not fair for you guys to dismiss what is becoming a much larger percentage of rural Minnesota and rural America. You got to acknowledge that this is a problem, that the racists, that they're becoming more prevalent, and the racism is becoming more mainstream. And unless you guys nip this in the bud, you know, this is not going to end well. May I make a suggestion? If you are a rural Democrat or if anyone living in rural America right now, ask yourself this question. You've been electing Republicans now for 30 years. How in the hell have they not helped you? How? They've had complete control of the state multiple times. They haven't helped you. They've had complete control of the federal government multiple times. They haven't helped you. The Democrats had, 2 years of being in control, and the first thing they did is try to pass universal health care so that you wouldn't have such high medical bills. That was trying to help you. Don't vilify. It doesn't work either way. Rural Minnesota's got a very justifiable reason to feel frustrated. But that's not the fault of Metro Democrats. That's a fault of the system created by the people who are mostly Republican today. And if we don't deal with this racism and we stop working together, if we have to work together, because if we don't, that racism is just going to take over and get worse and worse and worse, and this divide will get larger and larger. These people are frustrated, but they have, to a point, a reason to be frustrated. And in with the frustration comes racism. And as long as we don't have people out there understanding that we are on their side trying to help them, the racism is going to get worse and worse and worse. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Hey, by the way, because I'm exhausted, I'm going to mail it in for the second half of the show tomorrow, Patrick. We did a great interview with H.W. Brands about the book, The Zealot and the Emancipator. We did this interview. It was aired on our members only page. We've made the decision we're going to air that full interview. It's a two-part interview. We're going to do that. That's going to be part of the show tomorrow. I'll be here for the beginning of the show, but the second half of the show will be that interview. So make sure you're here with that once again tomorrow. H.W. Brands talking about his book, The Zealot and the Emancipator. So, and a very interesting interview. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. You've got to have a more unified DFL party. All you have to do is look at what the Republicans did. They basically went into their most conservative district, took the talking points, took the platform straight out of that county, and brought it to every other county in the state, including liberal counties in the metro area. And that was the campaign they ran with. And they held the Senate and they picked up some seats in the House. So what is the DFL doing wrong that is preventing them from winning these districts? Well, I think the problem is too much of an umbrella. It's too wide. There's two very, you know, it's not, there's, it's incredibly hard to have a consistent message when you have such extremes of the party. You have a lot of Republicans who their entire campaign was, I love a lot of Democrats whose entire campaign, the second time I've done that, a lot of Democrats whose entire campaign was, I love Republicans. And you have this rift between DFLers, not Republicans, but DFLers, where the outstate DFLers vilify the metro area DFLers. That's their number one villain in their campaign. And I mean, I'm sorry, you're going to end up killing the DFL if you continue down this path. And that is why you did not pick up seats in the Senate. That is why you lost some seats in the House, is that your message is so convoluted because your eyes are too big, that the Republicans are leaving their party and you're saying, well, come on into our party, without thinking about whether or not there's actually room for them in your party. That's just my point on that. Clearly, there's some feeling that needs to be some change. A leadership challenge is shaping up in the DFL caucus. Third-term state senator, or state representative, rather, Jamie Becker Finn of Roseville has confirmed she's going to run against House Majority Leader Ryan Winkler of Golden Valley for the post. The challenge comes just days after the 2020 election saw members of the House Democratic Labor Caucus lose their races, narrowing their majority. Though the sum results are still being tabulated, Democrats now have a 69-65 majority if current results hold. I can confirm that I am running for majority leader. Becker Finn told The Reformer, right now I am focused on making sure our 69 remaining members are fully supported and come back as strong as ever in 2022. Winkler said he welcomed the challenge, calling it a healthy part of the political process. Becker Finn is a member of the House People of Color and Indigenous Caucus, a descendant of the Leechland Band of Ojibwe. Winkler, who has served 7 non-consecutive terms in the House, he resigned his seat in 2015 and lived abroad with his spouse for a while, has recently championed issues for communities of color, including supporting a tax cut levy of Worthington. The House DFL will caucus Thursday evening, hours after the Senate DFL caucus will similarly meet to discuss the results of the election, which appeared to show a divided legislature will continue for the next 2 years at least, and likely till 2024. So it's I think that that's what you're seeing is, once again, hey, it's sure looking like Joe Biden's going to win this presidential race, but what the hell happened to all the rest of the races? We should have absolutely clobbered these guys, and I think there's, like I said, that's what, at the end of the day, that's where I'm thinking the problem is lying. So, 952-946-6205, time for the Minnesota coronavirus update. 25 COVID-19 deaths reported by the Minnesota Health Authorities on Thursday, along with a record 3,956 diagnosed infections of the coronavirus that causes the disease. Thursdays have offered some of the most severe data totals of the fall due to this administrative cycle of reporting COVID-19. That trend continued. Minnesota's overall total in the pandemic is now 2,555 deaths, 164,865 infections through although 936 infections are listed as probable due to use of antigen testing. I don't know. If you're at 164,000, I don't think you need to try to, hey, but it's not as bad because 900 of them might not really be there. Yeah, it's bad. There's no putting a shine on that apple at this point. Right now, it feels like we're losing ground, said Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm. And yeah, you are. You know why? Because Republicans have actively undermined the science of the pandemic. I mean, you have Paul Gazelka and Kurt Dowd openly insisting that they would get rid of all emergency powers, that they would basically that they would open up every business, they'd open up every school, and they say, you know, and just say, oh, we hope you're going to be okay. You know, so we're not going to tell you can't get everyone else in sick, but we'd kind of hope that you wouldn't do it. But that's up to you. We're not trying to tell you what to do. If you want to go sick in your entire community, go do it. That's your right. And that's what they're saying. That is what they're saying. It's your right to go sicken the entire community. Wow, that's a platform, isn't it? Even Pat Garofalo is like, we get to get rid of the emergency governor ordinance. Dear God, the only thing keeping this from spiraling out of control at this point is Governor Walz. And you guys need to, can you guys do me a favor? Just go to your own districts and tell people, wear a freaking mask. Try to limit large group gatherings. Wash your hands. Why don't you guys do that? Now the election's over, why don't you actually go act like responsible adults and try to save your constituents as opposed to serve them up to a coronavirus death buffet? I'm tired of this. COVID-19 hospitalizations also increased on Thursday, updated the state's pandemic response dashboard. Numbers of Minnesota hospital beds with COVID-19 patients increased to 931, including a record 216 patients who needed intensive care because of breathing problems, complications from their infection. Minnesota Hospital Association urged people to continue with the mitigating strategies of mask wearing, social distancing, staying home when sick, and avoiding large crowds in order to take the pressure off the hospitals and their workers. No, but Republicans say if we try to take the pressure off you guys, well, the liberals win. That's Kurt Dowd. That's Paul Gazelka. If we try to make less people sick, then, you know, the Democrats are the victorious. We can't do that. Jesus. Beyond these numbers, the healthcare heroes and care teams are working with 24/7 weekdays and weekends. They deserve our help now. More than 15,000 Minnesota healthcare workers, mostly long-term care facilities, have tested positive for COVID-19. Health officials have reminded the mitigation steps work in combination with lower infection risks, that adherence to only one won't be productive. The state also is urging people, especially with COVID-19 symptoms and viral exposure risk, to seek testing, including a 7 free saliva collecting centers. Hey, let's collect some saliva, huh? All my best. If you guys are out there working, I appreciate you. You guys are working on this. Sweet Lord, this is not good. And I am of the mindset, and I posted this yesterday, I truly think that the reason we are seeing this now is because schools are back. And I think it's a case where college kids went off to school. They've come back home once or twice. They've gotten family members sick. I think football is a big problem. I'm not saying that other sports are not, but football, it seems that the minute that we brought football back, And that has to be acknowledged. The minute you brought football back, all of a sudden these numbers started going up and going up fast. And once again, kids on the team, they might only get a little bit sick. They might even not even know they're sick, but they're taking it back home and getting mom and dad and grandma and grandpa sick. And, you know, one football game, think about the impacts of one football game in the next week. How many people are getting infected within each community that represents said football team? That's, I honestly think, like I said, I think that that's the case. Is that when schools reopened and people are pushing for schools to open up and football started getting played again, that's when these numbers started getting worse and worse and worse. Steve is in Minneapolis. Let's get Steve's call in here before we get into the break. Welcome on in, Steve.
Hey. Greetings from George Floyd Square.
Hi, Steve.
This is going to be wildly off topic, but there has been a nonstop train of C-130s flying over my house all day. What's your best guess? Is Trump up to something?
No, my guess would be, Steve, is that we're talking about, and thanks, Steve, I appreciate the phone call. We have an Army Reserve, Air Force Reserve base over off of Fort Snelling. That's an active working base. And there are some times where they do training maneuvers, which, and most of the time, you know, in the military, when you got this stuff, it's taking off, doing a patterned flight circle, and then landing. C-130s are cargo planes. And, you know, if you're talking about, okay, what if there are some protesters up on 94, what, they're going to airborne them in? I mean, it's okay, you're going to scatter them across, say you're in the Midway. You're going to launch half the people into freaking Allianz Field. It's not exactly, you have roads. For goodness sakes, I could get you, if I had protesters out on I-94 and I had to get there from Fort Snelling, there's at least 8 different ways I could think of off the top of my head that I could get them up there driving, which are a little more effective. They're not going to, the C-130s, I don't know, it's a cargo plane, maybe it's used for airborne, but I'm not going to. I don't think that's anything there. I think it's probably just some training going on over at Fort Snelling because they do that occasionally. I have been out. As a matter of fact, I took some pictures on one of my earlier walks. Where was I? I was up at Golden Valley. I was on the park at Theo Worth Park, and I was hiking up there. And we were walking around the lake up there on Theo Worth right off of 55. And all of a sudden off to the left, there was a C-130 flying. You know, I don't think you need to be worried about it, okay? You know, if they start flying warthogs into the metro, then you might be a little concerned. Those are basically flying tanks that can shoot an insane amount of rounds real quick. So then I'd be a little concerned. But C-130s, there you go. My military knowledge has come into play. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's take a final break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
We're breaking out this time, making out with the wind.
Down to 90,000 in Pennsylvania. Down to 90,000. They say there's like 800,000 votes left to count. If those are from Democratic areas like they're saying they're from, Pennsylvania is definitely going to. I think Pennsylvania is definitely going to be going to Joe Biden. We'll have to see. They're saying by tonight we might have a much better idea of where things end up here. We used to carry stories that didn't have to do with politics, so why not? Patrick, are you a hunter? Have you ever done much hunting?
I'm not. I'm not a guy who wants to get up at 2 in the morning and go sit in the dark, but knock yourself out.
Not well. You might be able to knock yourself out with the new deer stand that's got a recall. The Lakeville Outdoors Hunting and Recreation Gear Company recalling thousands of tree stands after 2 users fell and suffered broken bones because of cable failures, according to federal regulators. Dude, you know how dangerous that is? You're going to have a loaded gun, and you're falling like 10 feet out of a tree with a loaded gun. You're lucky you only hurt yourself. Ugh. U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission announced a recall on Wednesday as roughly 3,400 X-Stand tree stands under the model names Silent Adrenaline. I'm going to guess it's not so silent when that cable breaks. has a tendency of spooking the deer. I'm just going to let you know. Also, it's also known as Apache. So if you got a deer stand that's a silent adrenaline or an Apache deer stand, it might be on the recall list. The recall comes just days after Minnesota's firearms deer season begins, shortly before sunrise on Saturday. The State Department of Natural Resources expect nearly 500,000 hunters to participate over the course of the season. Be careful out there and check your deer stand. I will say I came across on one of my walks, I came across a deer hoof mark. I swear to God, I asked, is this a moose? It was huge. It's got to be one of the biggest deer I've ever seen. Either that or I just got a Bigfoot. I mean, it could just be, it could have been dealt a bad hand, you know? And that's Bigfoot Larry over there. There he is. There he goes. That front left paw. Huge. Prince taking us out today? Why not? Yes. I want to be your lover. Indeed. I want to be your lover, Pennsylvania, Arizona, and Nevada. Georgia, too. Oh, yeah. I got you on my mind. Have a good one. Back on a Friday. Till then, see ya.